Today on Wings, stories impacting the world's workers, the EU, and Guatemala.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Welcome to Wings. Today we update you on the progress of the International Labour Convention against violence in the workplace and share a victory in the struggle for a more social Europe and introduce you to the first out lesbian to have served in the Guatemalan Parliament. The International Labour Organization, or ILO, has been negotiating the language and scope of a convention against violence in the world of work for the past 3 years. This was after many years struggling to even get it on the agenda. On June 21st, 2019, it finally passed. The convention strengthens the labor protections against gender-based violence, including against the LGBTQI community, and for the first time addresses workplace support for those experiencing domestic violence. I'm Mindy Ran, and for the past 4 years, I've been part of a group lobbying for this convention, along with Chidi King, Director of Equality at the International Trade Union Confederation, or ITUC. In April 2018, she spoke to me about how trade union groups had come together and why the International Labour Convention Against Violence in the Workplace is so important to workers globally.
I think this is an example of where the international trade union movement as a whole has really got together behind this. So it has been the ITUC, the ETUC, and the global union federations, the sectoral global union federations, who have really pushed us to the point where we're on the brink of having a standard setting discussion on an international standard on violence and harassment against women and men in the world of work.
Now, why one convention? As far as I understand it, there are all sorts of conventions that actually cover violence.
Yes, it's true that there are many instruments, both conventions and recommendations in the ILO that touch on, I wouldn't say they address, but they touch on the issue of violence. So they already recognize that this is an issue in the world of work, that something needs to be done about it, but it's addressed in very much a piecemeal and ad hoc fashion. So, for instance, sexual harassment is not really dealt with in any ILO convention as, you know, a subject in its own right. What has happened is that we have a convention on non-discrimination, which is a fundamental convention, and the committee of experts has said, well, of course, sexual harassment is a form of discrimination, so it's covered by 111. But then what about other forms of violence, and what are those other forms of violence? There is no instrument that deforms what these other forms of violence might be, particularly through a gender lens. There is no instrument that tells us what government's obligations to address violence and harassment in the world of the work concretely are across the board. We may have something, you know, in a sectoral instrument that says, well, you know, this needs to be done in order to address it in this way, in this sector, but nothing that's right across the board. So that's why this instrument is so important. And of course, it's important not just in terms of government's obligations, but in terms of the obligations of employers, critically. And for us as a trade union movement, it also gives us, you know, a mirror to hold up and say, well, what are we doing about this issue, not only in the workplaces where we organize, but also within our own organizations as well.
Chidi King, Director of Equality at the International Trade Union Confederation, or ITUC. The convention finally passed. The new ILO Violence and Harassment Convention and Recommendation is considered a landmark decision for equality and human rights. But it is far from the end of the road. Now it must be ratified by UN member states, and, most importantly, it must be implemented. This gap between great legislation and action is well known within Europe. Elected Confederal Secretary of the European Trade Union Confederation, or ETUC, Montserrat Mir, spoke to me in April 2018 about trade union and gender rights work towards a more social Europe. I asked if the idea that Europe had things sorted out when it came to rights for women workers was correct. Montserrat Mir.
No, that will be a paradise or Alice in Wonderland. Not the paper's paradise, the land of miracles, no. True that Europe during years was the region of the world more active in progress, in help citizens to develop their lives in a good environment with a social support. But during the last years, citizens have lost the confidence and the trust in this Europe because the markets and the economy replaced the citizens' rights. And that's the reason also that ETUC asked, representing more than 50 million people, we have been asking for the social Europe as a solution of the far-right emergence of parties that are occupying the national parliaments. And there is a reason. If citizens, they lose the confidence in their governments, sometimes they vote for strange and peculiar parties that they are not focused on workers' rights, the opposite, but they sell a kind of magic formula that with them all lives and people will live in a better country.
Do you see specific rights have been eroded over the last decades? And can you give us an idea of what particular right you've really seen there have been problems with?
Yes, through the austerity policies, there is one major right that has been make weak and in some occasions remove in some sectors is the right of negotiate agreements, is the collective bargaining, because it's the place where we workers and trade unions, we can negotiate good conditions, good wages, good rights at the in our labor life. But if this right is some companies or governments decide that it's not the key to negotiate and they decide to avoid negotiations, our workers are at risk. And that's the reason. Another right linked to that is the right to strike. That has been attacked in several countries, and not only by companies, has been attacked by governments, that they decide that the right to strike is an obstacle to competitiveness and is an obstacle for the workers that they want to work. But with this ambition to deregulate the working conditions, they attack the collective bargaining and the right to strike. That are the major two attacks that concern to our work. And of course, all rights, the rights to have a good employment, because it's linked to the collective agreements. If you don't have a good employment, if you don't have good rights, you don't have conciliation, you don't have good wages. That's the reason also that we have launched a good campaign on Europe needs a pay rise, because the solution is not to compete with low wages. It's not to have a society low cost. That was the message. Local society for to be more efficient, for to produce with low prices, but at what price? At the price to have one part of the society living in poverty, workers with job, with employment, living in poverty, and that has created inequality. And inequality conduct to far-right parties, populism, xenophobia, and this phenomenon that we are seeing now in Europe.
You also hear about workers' poverty, i.e., people who work for a living, but they can't afford to live off of what they earn. And as far as I understand, there have been a lot of
legal directives and agreements concerning pay gap and violence against women, particularly in the workplace, and all these sorts of things have been part of the EU legislation for a very long time. You know, we've had equal pay laws for over 50 years now, but there's still a gender pay gap in Europe, yes?
Still a gender pay gap. We have the norms, and that also, as I say, this is the reason of this campaign on we need a pay rise, because we consider that if we go up with the wages for all workers, women will be the most beneficiated. But it's true that we have legislation, but we don't have a directive on violence at work. That is what we are demanding. We have several directives on security that supposedly protect citizens against violence, but we don't have a specific directive or law at European level that permits workers to be protected and to demand the governments to protect them in this context, in the context of violence. There are now some countries that are beginning to legislate, parliament initiatives. In Spain, for example, there is in discussion recently a new law against violence against women, and there are initiatives. I think that because at certain moment, one problem that was hidden or was a secondary problem emerged as a key problem in a moment that women are trying to enter in the labor market, are trying to have professional careers with good salaries, and violence is a power instrument to say to women, occupy your place, but don't disturb, because this wall is our wall, means at certain moment is a power tool to have this protection, because if you feel protected, you can confront this problem.
You're listening to Wings with me, Mindy Ran, speaking to the ETUC Confederal Secretary, Montserrat Mir, about creating a more social Europe through a concept known as the European Pillar of Social Rights. So what is the social pillar?
Yeah, social pillar is a very, very good initiative on our opinion, on the Treaty of Opinion, because it's a good signal that the social Europe is back. During years, we have on the center of our policies the economic, the euro, the crisis, the debt, and nothing we're speaking of the people that were behind. When you begin to talk about social, it's important because not only for Europe, I think it's important worldwide because you are talking about rights. And all means rights means to improve lives of people, to improve lives of citizens and workers. And this social pillar could be a back idea, could be only a good declaration. But we are here, trade unions, pushing for this social Europe dimension. And we think that is a good instrument, is an umbrella of diverse enforcement of actual legislation, new legislation that can improve workers' life, and also is the message that we launch to the society. In a moment that a part of the Europeans, they have lost their trust in Europe, is a good message. And we need to support this initiative of the pillar. The pillar have one main legislative initiative, that is the Work Life Balance Directive. It's the main part of this, the only directive, the only law that in that moment is part of the pillar. At the same time, there is an intention to extend social protection to all workers, not only to the standard workers. I'm talking about the self-employed, the bogus self-employed, the ones that are non-standard workers, temporary, those workers that we must not forget that they are workers and they don't have the same level of protection as full-time workers have. And we think that all initiative that supposes extension of rights must be welcome for us, and we need to intervene. The other is the revision of the written statement, the same. Each worker has the right to know his working conditions, the time that he will work, when, where, the holidays that he will have, the social protection systems. But that, it looks that was forbidden because there are a lot of workers that they don't know. They don't know if tomorrow they will work, when they will work, and where. Because there are also the services companies that they subcontract services, that this is a way to extend the precariousness to all sectors. And for that reason, we think these three main initiatives could be a good improvement for workers in Europe. Means Is good, the social pillar, the European pillar of social rights? Yes, is good. And also could be a good instrument once the action plan will be published, because now we have the proclamation, means all Europe is in favor, they say. And now will be the moment to act, with the moment to transform this nice declaration in actions, in political and legislative actions. And we will see the level of commitment of those 28 countries that they have said yes to social Europe. But they must show at the moment that they will need to implement those legislations at national level. And we will be very active pushing those governments to follow their compromises and their commitments.
There's an attitude, I think, when people hear the words work-life balance. What is work-life balance?
Work-life balance is a set of, again, legislative measures, because during a long time, as a trade unions, we have been pushing the Commission for a revision of what we have called the big law, the maternity directive, the maternity leave directive. Commission have tried 2 years ago, they have withdraw the revision of the law, and during 10 years we don't have any legislation that removes obstacles to women to enter in the labor market, and we have been pushing. And at the end, work-life balance, that means conciliation, means that there is something apart to work. There is time, we need time to dedicate to our families, if you have kids or not, independent, to your families, time to conciliate with your life, your private life, your hobbies, your objectives in life, not only to work. And at the same time, people with kids need time to dedicate, to break these stereotypes and roles that moms are carrying children. And if they if moms don't have a job or they have a precarious job, it's not a problem, because father will occupy the role, the classic role of provider of food and house and light and warm. That's the reason that we think that we need to remove these obstacles. There is a study, very interesting, a study organized by Eurofond. Eurofond is an institution that provides research for the European institutions, that they quantify for first time in figures the losses that Europe have if they don't provide the necessary tools to remove obstacles for women to enter in the labor market. And it's 370 million euros, the money that we lose each year for not incorporate women in the labor market. And that is very innovative, because it's not only a declaration, puts figures, means in business terms, we are losing a lot of talent and money not removing the obstacles for women to be in the labor market.
On 13 June 2019, the Work-Life Balance Directive was adopted by the EU Employment, Social Policy, Health, and Consumer Affairs Council, the very first legislation under the European Pillar of Social Rights. The ETUC now wants urgent action to implement the directive, especially paid parental and carers leave, and to enable women to play a full role in the workplace. The music you have just heard was that of Sandra Moran, Guatemalan feminist activist, campaigner for indigenous women's rights, and the first out lesbian elected to the Guatemalan parliament. Wings producer Frida Weirden spoke to her at the Women Deliver conference held in Vancouver, Canada in June 2019, just before her political term had ended. This is an edited version that was first aired on This Way Out.
You ran for parliament as an out lesbian. How was that possible in Guatemala?
Well, I've been part of the women's movement, feminist movement, since more than 25 years ago. And I was invited to be part of the list of one political party from the left. And then when I was elected, one of the first things that I thought that was very important to be openly lesbian in the Congress, because it's the first time that that happened. It's the first time that the community has a voice then, and hasn't been easy, but I think we need to open spaces for everyone. And then I have the responsibility to present laws for the rights of LGBT people, but also for the rights of for women, children, and indigenous people.
That's a big portfolio.
It is. Yes. So big, but that's the possibility for all this social movement to have voice in the Congress. And I think has been difficult for everything, but very important.
So when you got into the Congress, at that point, the Congress had changed and moved to the left?
No. We are just five from the left. I'm on 158. We are a small group, and we are hoping that for the next election that is happening in June 16, in a few days, we will change a little bit the power in the Congress, hoping that people can vote for the left.
Now, are you running again?
No, I'm not running. My political party decided that no one from us, three of us, are going to be reelected. Then we start talking with other political parties, and finally I didn't got the space to do it. I will continue working in the movement.
What has been achieved, or what have you attempted to achieve, with respect to LGBT in Guatemala?
Well, I introduced two proposals of law. One is gender identity for trans people, and the second is to recognize as crime the violence that all LGBT people suffer. No one have passed, of course, but the step up was to recognize that that happened, to talk about it, and in the political sense, it's the first time that in the Congress we talk about issues of LGBT people, and then it's very important for the community that finally those issues are discussing in the plenary in the Congress.
So is anybody besides your three party members, has anybody else stepped forward and said this is a good idea to either of those?
Well, no, because as they said, that they don't give them votes. Instead, they lose votes. Then people is very conscious about the votes and about the need to maintain their seats. In private sessions, they say, well, I'm with you, I support you, but I cannot say it in public.
I saw you speaking on YouTube about gay marriage and domestic partnerships. Did you raise that issue? Can you say something about it?
Yeah, I also have the proposal of the law of that, although from the movement, they don't support totally that proposal. Then I didn't present the proposal, because there is a law that undermining the rights that we have, and one part of that law is to prohibit the same-sex marriage.
Domestic partnerships, is that a possibility?
No. In that law, they wanted to prohibit domestic partnership, and they want to prohibit marriage. We are discussing that law now, and it's in the moment in Guatemala we have to debate three times the law in order to pass. The law is in the third moment in order to pass, and we are trying and discussing it in the way that they won't have the votes, but that's the discussion about, and they need 80 votes to pass it, and hoping that they won't have it. And also, we are working together with the social movement for them to say loud that they are not agreeing that with that law.
So this is a law that's proposed by the right to prohibit domestic partnerships, as well as, and they've already prohibited gay marriage.
Yeah, by the right wing, but also by the churches. Actually was a law written by the head of the many churches, and through the political party was presented in the Congress.
So in general, the atmosphere in Guatemala, is it getting better for gay people or worse?
We have two sides. First of all, I think it's more openly. And for example, 2 years ago, the march was 25,000 people on the street. And that was a beautiful thing because, I was part of the first demonstration, and that wasn't back in 1995, and we were so afraid to be on the streets, and now to be part of those huge demonstrations is beautiful, and also it's beautiful to see that youth is openly there, and also families. I feel that that's why the right wing and the churches are so afraid that can be stronger, and then they are pushing back. They're trying to push back the movement and the recognition of our rights. That's the conflict. That's the struggle. And as we know, it's not just in Guatemala. It's everywhere. You know, the pushing back of the rights of women and LGBT people. And then we have to be stronger, and we have to organize better ourselves, and we have to networks, no, to make networks. And I'm glad that I'm here, and we just launched the Parliamentarians Group Alliance that we just launched right now, and that's a global group of parliamentarians who are committed for the rights of women, children, and LGBT people.
Wow, excellent. How can we find out more about this parliamentarians group?
I'm sure it's going to be announced, and each parliamentary can sign to be part of the group, and also I'm part of the Indigenous Women Parliamentarians Alliance that we just formed last week in Peru. And I already sent a message to them in order that Indigenous women parliamentarians also can be part of that. Then I believe that group can be a strong platform to continue the struggle and the work that we do in all the parliaments in order to pass the laws that we as women, children, and LGBT people need.
That was Sandra Moran speaking to Frieda Weirden. And although Moran did not run again, the June 16 elections in Guatemala saw the first openly gay man win a seat, crediting Moran with having opened the door for him. My thanks to Chidi King, Montserrat Mir, Sandra Moran, Frieda Weirden, and This Way Out. I'm Mindy Rann in Amsterdam for Wings.
To hear this and other Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org or visit our new website, wingsradio.org, to download recent shows. Please also check out facebook.com/wingsradio, where the latest program will be the top entry, followed by a daily news feed of items about women around the world. Wings thanks all our supporters, your local community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, editor of the new book, The Maternal Roots of the Gift Economy. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. I'm Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.